compassion begins at home. Because I don't believe my thoughts, sadness can't exist. That's how I can go to the depths of anyone's suffering if they invite me, and take them by the hand and walk them out of it into the sunlight of reality. I've taken the walk myself. I've heard people say that they cling to their painful thoughts because they're afraid that without them, they wouldn't be activists for peace. If I felt completely peaceful, they say, why would I bother taking action at all? My answer is, because that's what love does. To think that we need sadness or outrage to motivate us to do what's right is insane. As if the clearer and happier you get, the less kind you become. As if when someone finds freedom, she just sits around all day with drool running down her chin. My experience is the opposite. Love is action. It's clear, it's kind, it's effortless, and it's irresistible.
What is a good man but a bad man's teacher? What is a bad man but a good man's job? If you don't understand this, you will get lost, however intelligent you are. It is the great secret.
How can I not be available to anyone who asks me for help? I love people just the way they are, whether they see themselves as saints or sinners. I know that each of us is beyond categories, unfathomable. It's not possible to reject people unless you believe your story about them. And really, I don't accept or reject. I welcome everyone with open arms. This doesn't mean that I condone the harm that people do or any form of unkindness, but no one is bad by nature. When someone harms another human being, it's because he or she is confused. This is as true of ordinary people as of the murderers and rapists I work with in prisons. They've been protecting to the death the sacred, stressful thoughts that they believe. If I see a mother hitting her child, for example, I don't stand by and let it happen, and I don't lecture the mother. She is innocently acting from a belief system she hasn't questioned. Because she believes her stressful thoughts, the child is disrespectful, he isn't listening, he shouldn't talk back, he shouldn't have done what he did, he needs to be forced into submission, she has to strike out. It's very painful to be confused. So when I see the mother, who is me, hitting the child, who is me, my way is to move to the mother, because she's the cause of the problem. I might go up to her and say, can I help? Or maybe, I know how painful it is to hit your own child. I have done that too. I've been there. Would you like to talk about it? Love doesn't stand by. It moves with the speed of clarity. It includes both the mother and the child. To help the mother work with her thoughts is also to help the child. And I know that ultimately I'm not doing it for either of them. I'm doing it for myself, for my own sense of what's right. So activism becomes very personal, and in my experience, it's more effective with a clear mind and no agenda. It's the same with any commitment. I keep my commitments to people because they're commitments to me. They're my business. They have nothing to do with the other person. Several years ago, when I was in Cologne, a German friend of mine asked me to come to the hospice as quickly as possible. He was dying, and he said that his dearest wish was for me to hold his hand and look into his eyes as he died. Of course, I said, I'll come right away. The hospice was in another city, about an hour's drive away. Another German friend offered to be my driver. His hidden agenda was to do some errands in the city while I sat with the dying man. He began to ask pedestrians for directions to where he wanted to go. I reminded him that I had a commitment to keep. He disregarded me and kept asking for directions. I tapped him on the shoulder, looked straight into his eyes, and very clearly told him, "Please start the car. I need to go to the hospice now." He paid no attention. After 5 minutes or so, when he had gotten the directions, he drove on and dropped me off at the hospice. I hurried to the door and knocked. Two very grave nuns appeared. I introduced myself, and they said that I was too late. Gerhard had just died. I had the thought, ah, I'm too late, and simultaneously a wordless, is it true, rose up to meet it. I felt a warm inner smile. If I had believed that I was too late, I might have felt sad, disappointed, angry at my driver, angry at myself for trusting him to get me there right away, and even devastated that I had let Gerhard down at the moment of his death. But I am always sure that reality's timing is better than mine. I had done my best, and this was obviously the perfect moment for me to arrive, neither too early nor too late. I told the nuns that I wanted to go to Gerhard's room, and they led me there. I sat down beside him. His eyes were wide open. He looked surprised. I held his hand, sat with him, and had a silent, wonderful visit. I love keeping my commitments.
Know the male, yet keep to the female. Receive the world in your arms.
Without a story, I'm neither personal nor impersonal, neither male nor female. There's no word for what I am. To call it nothing is as untrue as to call it something. Who needs a name for it in the middle of life and death? It does what it does. It eats, sleeps, cooks, cleans, talks to a friend, and goes its own way, delighted. I love everything I think, and I'm never tempted to believe it. Thoughts are like the wind or the leaves on the trees or the raindrops falling. They're not personal. They don't belong to us. They just come and go. When they're met with understanding, they're friends. I love my stories. I love being a woman, even though I'm not. I love the way my 63-year-old body flows and opens. I love